Holly.
Okay. Looks like we've solved our technical difficulties and we are recording.
Good.
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is the Think Tank for March 10th, 2010. And as always, we are joined by our moderator, Tammy Nelson. Again, you can find a link to this recording and all other Think Tank recordings by going to gettingtheloveyouwant.com/thinktank. Again, that's gettingtheloveyouwant.com/thinktank. And I'll turn it over to Tammy Nelson. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Kevin. And today I'm thrilled to have back Bill O'Hanlon, who has now authored up to 30 books, I think.
Yep.
And he is a very dynamic keynote speaker. He speaks at conferences all over the world. He's a motivational business speaker, leads trainings, coaches people, offers a lot of these type of teleclasses, and has a very interesting background, which I won't go into his whole varied and eclectic history, but you can certainly go on his website, which is BillO'Hanlon.com, to find out his interesting background and some of the things that he's offering. You can also buy all his books and the books that he's co-authored and find out how to get in touch with him. And for those of you who are on this think tank today, we're going to put up some slides that you'll be able to access as well that are sort of in addition to this class that will help you along. And he is offering a discount to a model therapist that may want to study a little bit further with him about this topic, which is how to write a book and get a book published, and getting your book written. The link for that we'll give at the end of the talk today for those of you who might be interested in pursuing that further. So, Bill, can you just tell us a little bit about this whole idea of writing, 30 books? Tell us how you've gotten so many books written. That's incredibly prolific.
Well, this is the second in a series, so if people missed the first one, they can go back and listen to it on the Imago website, Getting the Love You Want website. And I really focused on the last call on how to get published.
Wait, hold on. Just got some weird echo.
Get a little feedback, yeah.
Okay, try that.
Okay, great. So we really focused on the last call on how to get published. This call, maybe we could have done it the other way around. I really wanted to speak to how, people ask me when I've written 30 books, how the heck do you write so much? I had 4 kids. I had a busy practice as a psychotherapist. I was traveling around teaching. I was doing supervision. I was just pedal to the metal busy, and I got 10 books written in 10 years with 4 kids. So, and they turned out relatively okay. They're all grown now and away from home. But there is a way to write in the midst of busy life, and there is a way to get yourself to write. I think that's the common things that I hear from people are, about not having enough time, or there are other things. We'll talk about those during this call, kind of barriers and procrastinations and fears and things like that. But for me, the two things that are crucial that got me to write 30 books, the first thing is that I was passionate. Now, I know a lot of people on the call, you're passionate about your topic. You're passionate about Imago or some variation on working with couples or working with relationships. This is what called you. You spent some money, some time learning Imago. It wasn't cheap. It took time away from your family, took time away from your practice, and you pursued that. Well, it's the same thing for me. Actually, though, I had a combination of a couple of passions. One is that the initial stuff that I wrote about and taught about was a combination of systemic therapy, which I was very excited about, and I studied with the late psychiatrist Milton Erickson, the eccentric psychiatrist in Phoenix area. I went to Arizona State and met him and studied with him. I didn't have any money, so I was his work-study student gardening for him while he was teaching me, and he just had an approach that I found endlessly fascinating. I was just obsessed with it. So I wanted to tell everybody in the world about it. So that was part of that passion. It was something that I loved that I just felt compelled to share with the world. After I was studying with Erickson while I was in graduate school, and after I got out of graduate school, I started working in a mental health center, and I got pissed off, frankly. I just got pissed off about the state of psychotherapy. It was kind of not so effective. And some of my colleagues, not all of them, but some of my colleagues, And these were usually ones who didn't read books or didn't go to continuing education because it wasn't required at the time. In fact, there was no licensing in Arizona at the time, when I lived there initially. They were people who didn't go to these conferences and didn't learn anything new after graduate school, and if they didn't get results with the approach that they learned in graduate school, they'd consider their clients resistant. Or some of them just thought that clients couldn't change. They were too damaged, or they were playing games and they were messing with us. They didn't really want to change. The only person who wants to change is a wet baby. When I came across this attitude, and I was kind of a hippie at the time. You and I were talking before the call started. I was a hippie transpersonal counselor kind of thing before I became a professional therapist. And, you know, I'm a pretty peace-loving guy, pretty easygoing. And I found myself just getting livid, pissed. I wanted to throttle these people in clinical meetings when they'd say, oh, this person's never going to change. I just got to keep seeing them. Or, you know, they're too damaged. They can't recover from this. And I, having studied with Erickson, who was psychotically optimistic that everybody could change and work with really difficult problems, I just got so pissed off about this. I wanted to yell and scream to the top of my lungs. I wanted to hurt people, you know, and I'm not a violent guy. So I was like, I got to figure out a way to channel this. And then I figured out, well, who do people listen to in the field? They listen to people who write books and teach workshops. They listen to the experts. And I had this sinking realization, oh, no. That means I have to write books. And I wasn't a natural writer. I'm kind of hyper, a little energetic, don't like to sit down in front of a, at the time, it was a typewriter, and now a keyboard at a computer, would rather talk, would rather move, would, you know, love doing therapy. That was just my speed. Writing, I wasn't good at it. I didn't want to do it. It was kind of boring. More than that, what was in my heart to write, once I started to write, I just wasn't a good writer, and it was very flat on the page. So what carried me through initially was passion. And so that's the first point I want to make. Don't write a book unless you have to, unless you're passionate about it, unless you really want to get something out in the world. It's a lot of work to write a book. So you've got to have the fuel to write the book, and the first fuel you want to get is either you're blissed about something or you're dissed or pissed about something. That is, you've got some energy that drives your writing or pulls you through your writing life. So connect with that energy. I do coaching, and I've done, you know, intensive groups teaching people how to write. And sometimes they come and they have a book they think they should write. I had a woman that came to see me in one of my coaching groups, and she was a child neuropsychologist, and she knew a lot about child neuropsychology, and she thought she should write a book about that. And she gets there, and I start talking about this stuff about passion, and she discovers within about a half an hour, yeah, I think I should write a book about child neuropsychology, but really what my passion is a particular spiritual approach, and that's what I'm so excited about. This neuropsych stuff I can do with my eyes closed, I'm not that interested in it. I'm just good at it. So it's not what you're good at. It's what you're passionate about. So that's the first way I've written 30 books. The second way that I've written 30 books is that I got a contract. People paid me money. I made an agreement to turn in the book at a certain time, and that's pretty compelling. They paid me money. I signed a contract. So, you know, go back and listen to the first call. It really helps if you know the book's going to be out there in the world. I guess I'd add a third thing is that I persisted. I was so committed to getting this stuff out in the world, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have any mentors. I didn't have anybody doing these kind of calls that I could listen to. I just stumbled around, and somehow I got my first book published, and then I got my second book published, and then I got my third one published. Once I started getting published, it got easier, and once I started writing more, it got more easier to do as well. I also found co-authors for some of my books, and that helped me get started. Now I hate having co-authors. It just slows me down and makes it much more work, but if you can't get going, like an exercise program, it's nice to have somebody to do the exercise with to pull you out on those days when you're not motivated, for you to pull them out on those days they're not motivated, and to be in dialogue rather than monologue. So those are some initial ideas of how I've been able to write 30 books that maybe a few people could relate to.
And so what are some tricks, Bill, that you might have? Like, what would you say are some of your methods to help people write quickly? Because you got a, you know, you got kids, you got work, and you're trying to accomplish all this stuff.
Well, there are a few tricks that work for me, but now the generic thing I want to say is everybody is different. And since I've been a writer, I've gotten more interested in the process of writing, and I've read maybe 400 writing books. And I was amazed to discover that everybody has a different writing process. I'll tell you one of my tricks. I'm not wildly ADD, but I'm a little scattered and a little ADD. And for me, it's easiest to write when I have super loud rock music going on in my office. I mean, blaring rock music. And a former partner of mine said, how can you write with that music on? Number one, the loudness would intrude upon me. And number two, the words of the song would get into my writing. They would just intrude. You know, I would find myself writing the lyrics. I don't. I can just kind of tune it out. But then I've read other writers that need absolute silence, or they need music with no words. So you've got to find your own process. But one of the things that worked for me was to – the easiest way for me to write is to have a clear outline. If I don't have a clear outline, my first book took 3 years because I didn't have a clear outline. My next book took 7 months because I had a super, super clear outline. So thinking about it ahead of time and outlining my project like you would outline a presentation. You know, I know you do presentations, Tammy. If you stood up there and just improvised for 8 hours or 6 hours, you might do pretty well. You're probably pretty good at improvising. But if you knew you had a really solid outline or slides prepared ahead of time, you probably do a lot better. You can improvise off those prepared points. And I think it's the same thing with a book. If you pre-think of your book and really take the time to outline it, that makes the book writing a lot quicker. Now, there are other tricks. I tried at one point, because it's much easier for me to speak than to write, I thought, well, why don't I just speak my books, get it transcribed, and do that? That actually turned out to be a lot more work because I transcribed a workshop. And I discovered I don't speak in grammatical sentences. I stop in the middle of a sentence. I jump into another sentence. It was actually harder to edit that than to do something from scratch. Now, I have sometimes written verbally, orally like that by just recording things, and it's a little different from a workshop. In a workshop, I feel really compelled to make it relevant to the people that are there, to move on quickly. When I'm just recording it, I can do a little more coherent job. So for some of you, this might be the best thing, is just to record it, because you're not that great at writing, but you're pretty good at speaking it. And you've got to find your voice when you speak it, not the formal voice. I think that's the other thing that gets in the way with people. For my first, I hate to say this, it's going to sound terrible. For my first 16 books, I was trying to write like a therapist, I think. You know, I was trying to sound authoritative and things like that. And I have a sort of a wise-ass, irreverent voice, really, in my actual life, even with my clients. I'm kind of wise-ass. I use a lot of humor. I use a lot of sarcasm. I'm very quick. And with my 17th book, I finally found my voice. Now, I suspect most of you can do it a lot quicker than I can.
I hope so.
Because the hint that I have to give you is, if it doesn't sound like your speaking voice, it could be a little different from your speaking voice, but if people who know you couldn't recognize that voice in the writing, go back to the drawing board and find how to free yourself, the real you, the passionate you, the irreverent you, the, you know, whatever, the kind of style that you have of speaking. If it doesn't at least resemble that, go back to the drawing board, because that's going to make it a lot easier. After that, my books got way easier to write. It used to take me, my first one, as I said, took 3 years. Next one took 7 months. The next one took a year. The rest of them took a year for a while. And then when I hit my stride with that 17th book, I can do a book in 3 months, 2 months, a month. I have a book due next week, and it's about a third done. I will finish it in the next week. It's a fairly short book, but once you find that kind of pathway to your voice, it's like wearing down a pathway in the woods or in a field, you can find your way back there again. So find your voice is another, I think, really important thing. Find the energy you have and let it come out from your heart and your soul and your mind onto the page.
Good suggestion. And just to expand on that a little bit, are there tricks to help people find that? I mean, do you suggest journaling or blogging?
Yeah, there are a few tricks, I think. Blogging is an interesting thing. I wrote a book called Write as a Verb about writing. Finally, after writing all these books, people kept asking me, how do you write and how do you get published? And I wrote a book about it. And I discovered in the research for that book that about 5 people have gotten best-selling books out of blogging. So that's a nice thing, and we're going to get into some specific methods about making your writing quicker and getting it done. But one of the things is blogging breaks it up into small pieces, which I find really works for people. And that's what happened for me when I had kids. I could not take 8 hours and write. It just didn't work for me to take 8 hours. I had kids to take to school, to pick up from school. I had, you know, social obligations, family obligations, as well as professional obligations, and I just wasn't going to get 8 hours to write. And that was probably a good thing for me because I don't know whether I would have been so productive in that 8 hours, but one of the things about a blog is it's really great to be able to write 10 minutes, 15 minutes, five paragraphs. And if you get in the habit of doing that, number one, it'll strengthen your writing muscle, but number two, you can blog your way to a book. The most well-known story is one that people will recognize. A woman was an office worker in New York City. She hated her job. She just did it for the money, and she really was killing her. And her husband was a techie, and it was in the early days of blogs, and he told her about blogs, and he showed her what blogs were, and she's like, you know, either I need to quit my job and do something else, or I need to distract myself, and so I'm going to blog. I've always wanted to, you know, cook Julia Child recipes. So for 1 year, every night she cooked a Julia Child recipe from The Art of French Cooking, and she blogged about it. And at first she sent it to her friends and said, go read this. And she had some disasters sometimes, some wonderful things. She mused about life, and she found her voice. And people started sending it on to their friends. By the end of the year, she had 100,000 people reading her blog, one of which was a literary agent, and offered her contract. It turned into a best-selling book, which turned into a movie, and now she's got a second book. So you can blog your way to a book. I think that's a really good way to do it. But the generic principle about that is do it in small increments. Don't overwhelm yourself. Don't say, I need to, you know, I have a friend. I don't know if I should mention his name, but he's a well-known therapist in the narrative tradition. He'll know if he listens to this who he is. And he came up to me one time at the Psychotherapy Networker conference where you're going in a week or so, and he said, oh, Bill, I know I've told you for years I'm going to write my book. A friend of mine has a house in Spain. He's just lent it to me for a month, and I'm just going to write for the month. I just looked at him, and I didn't want to say anything to rain on his parade, but I knew he wouldn't write that book. I just knew. Staring at a blank computer screen and having a whole month, he'd be down at the pub, hanging out with people. He's a very social guy. He's there all alone. There is no way he was going to write. I could write a book in a month with that kind of, you know, setting because I know how to do it, but he didn't have the discipline. It's overwhelming to look at that blank screen and think, I have 30 days. I have to finish my book in this 30 days because then I have to go back to my busy life. Learn to write in the midst of your busy life and do it in small increments. Have that outline in front of you. Have it with you all the time. Even put it on 3x5 index cards. Each section, each paragraph, each, you know, part of a chapter should be on a 3x5 card. Take it with you. Make notes. Come back and write if you don't have your computer with you. Do it in small increments. That's probably going to be the easiest way for most people.
Wait, can you say that again? Like, say that and expand on that a little bit. So you would do an outline and then do index cards. Yeah.
Say you have an outline and you have 8 chapters. Then start to do an outline within those chapters. You're going to do point A, point 1, and point 1A, point 1B, point 1C, then point 2, ABC, and really detail outline the chapter. What's going to be in there? And we'll talk about a method of doing that in a minute, generating an outline. But once you've got your outline, put each point, if you will, like 1A, 1B, on an index card. Just bring it with you. Whatever you feel like writing at that point, pull out that index card. Find the thing that you have the most energy to write. You don't have to write it in order once you've outlined it really well. You know, I used to try and write my books in order, and my mind doesn't work like that. I get really excited about one part. Another part I'm thinking, what was I thinking? I don't even know what I'm going to say about that right now. But once I write the part I'm excited about, the other part starts to become clearer for me. So if you can break down your book into little pieces, put them on a 3x5 card, just write them, and then have either a notebook with you or space on the back of that 3x5 card to either make notes or do some actual prose writing, that can be a way to break it into 5 minutes. Everybody's got 5 minutes, so that's the second hint that I have. Write 5 minutes a day. Do not ever skip a day when you're writing a book. Now, I know that sounds a little crazy, but almost everybody can find 5 minutes a day, and I find that if you develop the commitment to write 5 minutes a day, I have a student who's a busy college professor, and she took this idea of writing 5 minutes a day. She meditated every day. She ran every day. So she had two disciplines that took up a lot of her time outside of her professional and personal life, and she just added, she got up 5 minutes earlier and did 5 minutes of writing every morning, and she finished her book in a year. So if you can write 5 minutes, but you can't write a book in 5 minutes if you don't know what you're writing. That is, have that outline so clear that you know what section you're writing on. Otherwise, it's just writing, and it'll just sprawl all over the place. You got to be focused and, you know what you're writing. So let me just say one more thing, because I said I'd mention it. A way to generate an outline, and one thing is, you know, what works for me, because I speak a lot, and so do you. I know you do workshops. I just do it like a workshop outline. So that's an easy way for me. But some people aren't used to that. They don't speak very much, and that's not their style. Another way to generate an outline is to create a set of about 18 words. Just write down 18 words about your topic, your particular topic. Then look at them all and cross out the three most boring ones, the ones that you thought were a good idea. So you're left with about 15. And then order those in some sort of sequence. Like what would logically come kind of near the front or first, and what would come next. So then put those in that order, and then do the same process under each word, so or each phrase. You know, just take that phrase, generate 18 words underneath it that are related to that phrase, drop out the most boring three, and then rearrange them. And after that, you've got your outline. So that's kind of a fast method of outlining. There are other methods of outlining, but those are two just to start with. The third thing I can say for generating the content of your book is pretend like you're writing a letter to a really good friend of yours who's very interested in your topic. And that usually frees most people up from being all worried and uptight and formal about it. They just tell their friend what they want to write about with no holds barred, not wondering what people are going to think about them because their friend already likes them and, you know, is well-disposed towards them. And you never have to publish this. Just write it down as if you were telling your friend, here's what I want to write a book about, here's what the content would be. Just write it to a friend.
Well, and that sort of leads to the next point is a lot of people seem sort of intimidated by the whole book writing process because they're not sure that people might be interested in their topic, or they're not sure they're going to get published, or there's so many other books written about this topic, you know, it's already been said, who's going to take this book? What would you say to that?
Well, I mean, I found a lot of what I guess I call writing poisons, and I put this on the slides when people get them off the website. But the writing poisons that will kill your writing, one of them is exactly that. I don't have anything original to say, and I remember having some friends talking one time, and they were talking about this, and they said, gee, you know, I don't know if I could write a book because I'm not sure I'd have anything original to say. And I thought, I've never had that thought. Because why? I'll tell you a quick story. There's a story about these two physicists, Hans Bethe and Leo Szilard, who worked on the atomic bomb, and they were good friends. After the war, they were talking one time, and Leo Szilard said, Hans, I think I'm going to start to write a diary, keep a diary. And he said, Hans said, why? And he said, I want to record the facts of the universe for the information of God, for God. And Hans looked at him kind of confused. He said, Leo, don't you think God already knows the facts of the universe? And Leo just looked at him and said, yes, but not this version. And I think that's what I tell people about. If you don't think you have anything original to say, you probably don't have that much original to say, but you have a slant on it no one else has. So find that unique slant. Find what, you know, look at all the books out there and think, why didn't anybody say this? I think this all the time. This is what I talk with my clients about all the time. This is what I think is really crucial. Nobody's talking about this stuff. So if whatever that is, what's missing in the world that you see or you experience or you talk with your clients about or you find that they talk about a lot that you've never seen a book about or you've never seen a book with that particular approach to it, that's your unique, you know, slant for the information of God. That is, you bring something unique to it. It's not that it has to be wholly original. Now, you can't copy. You can't just rewrite Harville's and Helen's book. You've got to find some slant. So, you know, I know you do stuff with Joe Cort. So Joe Cort has a slant on things that other people don't have on Imago, partly because he's gay, but partly because he has his own slant. You have your own slant. You're focusing on a certain area. You're focusing on sexuality a lot. So find your slant within this broader category, something that people aren't talking about, you know. So I think, and you know, I know you and Joe have a wonderful way of being provocative, too. That's another slant, to say, everybody thinks this, but we think this, and we're going to make a compelling case for it. So be contrarian. That's another way to find something original to say about the same old topic. I think a few other poisons I should mention while we're on the topic. One is the perfection poison. It has to be I had a friend with a PsyD talking to another friend with a PsyD, and I have a master's degree. And I walk up to him at the end of a conference, and they said, oh, get out of here, O'Hanlon. I said, what? And they said, you know, we're just trying to write our first books, and here you are. You've got like 12. I don't know. I had 12 at the time. And they were telling me what stopped them. They said, we're trained as PsyDs to have to know every reference in the area before we put pen to paper.
Yeah.
And I said, man, you know, we have to know everything about this field before we write. And I said, if I had done that, I would never have written a word, because I wrote a book about Erickson, and in that book I put Erickson, Milton Erickson was the first therapist to focus on the future. And someone wrote me an irate letter and said, oh, my God, you're such a dolt. Don't you know that Alfred Adler was the first therapist to talk about the future many years before Erickson? And he just berated me, and I wrote back and said, no, I didn't know that. Send me the reference, please. The next time I write that book and revise it, I'll put that in there. And then someone, I told that story in a workshop, and someone said, you're both wrong. It was Carl Jung in 1919 or something like that. And I said, great. It's always, you're always going to be revising. You can't know everything. So don't be the writing doesn't have to be perfect. Your knowledge doesn't have to be perfect. You just have to get your car out of the garage and starting on down the road. You can fix it in the mix.
Boy, I think that's so valuable. You don't have to know everything. It's so valuable, particularly as therapists trying to write books, because you know, the competition that in people's minds to try to sound smart, to try to be brilliant, to try to say what hasn't been said, and to try to, you know, put themselves out there without fear of, you know, condemnation is very, very, I mean, just the therapist that I supervise struggles so much with, you know, writing articles and stuff. I mean, I know that it can be such a block, and so I really appreciate you saying that.
You know, and a few people will criticize you, guaranteed. If you
put
yourself out in the world, people will criticize you, and the vast majority will ignore you.
Mm-hmm.
They won't even listen to you. They won't even pay attention to what you've written. And the vast majority of the others who actually read your stuff will be really supportive. They'll be kind. They'll be generous. And there's a few people that are always going to be a little cranky or a little critical, or you've pushed their button in the wrong way. Just know that, you know, some people are going to put you down no matter what you do, even if it's perfect.
And what about the people that say, well, it'll never get published, and the industry is so bad now, and what's the point?
You know, it's that same thing of like, oh, when I was your age, I had to walk to school without moccasins. I hear that all the time. I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And when I moved here, people said, oh, you came at the wrong time. You should have been here in the 60s. It was a really great place. And then, you know, people would come in 2000 and say, oh, you should have been here in the 90s, which is when I came. It was a really great place. You know, people do that stuff. The industry, it's always going to have challenges. They need to make money. You know, there's a lot of things competing for your attention, a lot of moving pixels that are competing for books' attention, but books still sell. My publishers are looking for books. They're saying, what do you got, Bill? Anything new for us? You want to publish another book? So clearly, publishers, like the music industry, like the movie industry, they always have to have new beans to push through their machine. They always are looking for the next cool thing, the next new thing. They're looking for trends. They're looking for new authors. They're always telling me who's good, what's new, what's hot. We want to be on the hottest trend. So, yes, it's challenging to get a book published, but people, I did it with no knowledge. You're getting a little knowledge here. If you listen to the first call, I gave you a bunch of hints about how to get published. But it is possible to get published, and especially for people on this call, if you're doing a professional book, professional books are way easier to get published. The barriers for entry are a lot less. You only need to sell – now, there's some controversy, and people will disagree with this a little, and they don't really release this figure – but a couple of thousand books, 2,000 or 3,000 books, to make back what the book publishing company in professional books, the psychotherapy kind of books, have put into it. So – you could probably sell a couple of thousand if you get the word out and do any kind of publicity. It is doable. I've coached hundreds of people to get published. It is, and it's even possible to get published in the broader, more general public kind of publishing with an agent, things like that. You just got to educate yourself. Now, I stumbled through it and was able to do it by accident. But there, then I, after that, I started reading books about it, learning about it, and getting better at the process. So just find somebody who knows a little more than you, who's a little ahead of you, who's willing to be generous and share either from a book or from a course. I, as we mentioned at the beginning, I have a course that I put online with how to get yourself focused, how to get yourself to write more comprehensive than what we can cover on this call, and how to get published, how to get an agent, how to get published, and when you need an agent. You don't always need an agent to get published. So for professional books, psychotherapy books, you don't need an agent. Agents won't take those kind of books. There's not enough money in them. You don't need them. So you can get a book published. Just do your homework. Be a little better than other people that submit, and make sure that your submission rises to the top of the list, and you can probably get published.
So that's a good comment too. So for your, I know you talked about this a little bit last week, but you don't really need an agent if you're doing a therapy book. You go directly to the publisher with your proposal. A lot of them will take unsolicited proposals.
All of them.
Yeah, and that
all the professional publishers take unsolicited. Now, if you have any connection to them, and you meet them at a conference, and you get a chance to talk to them, or you know somebody who knows them, that'll probably help you a little. But in the psychotherapy field, absolutely not required. Cold submissions, as they call them, are done all the time and often published.
And for cold submissions, what do you suggest to give people a little confidence? Aside from taking your course and reading your books, what do you suggest as people are just beginning to write to give them a little confidence that they can submit good book proposals, et cetera? Should they focus on the book proposal first or focus on their outline?
Yes. Well, you have to have an outline to do a book proposal. So focus on the outline. Get your focus right first. Get your outline right first, second, and then write a proposal. The proposal is going to be essential. Do not ever write your book before you sell it. That is my best advice. That is, the nature of the book may change because the editor may want to work with you on the structure of it, and if you've written the whole book, you may be too attached to it. So write a proposal first. Learn how to write a proposal. There, you know, I publish a lot of my books with W.W. Norton Professional Books, and they have right on their website, go on W.W. Norton, just Google W.W. Norton Professional Books, and they have right on their website a proposal form. You can download it. Follow that form. Don't do a lot of variation on it. Follow that form. Put your content into that form and submit it, and that is the way to sell your book. You'll need a little writing sample, too, and that's the way to sell a book in a professional way. That's also the way to sell a book to an agent. That's also the way the agent will sell a book to a broader publisher, one for the general public. But that proposal is the keystone piece for everything. But you can't do a proposal without a great outline and a great focus for your book. You don't even have to have a great title. Most of the time, they're going to change your title anyway, so don't worry you so much about that. That's the perfection poison again. Just get a good enough title and a great outline and a really great writing sample. Fill in the proposal in the way that they want you to fill it in, and you're on the road.
That's great advice. I'm just looking over your slides to make sure that we covered everything in your blocks and poisons because they're so great.
I see a couple here that we haven't. Let me just cover them quickly.
When you talk about not in the mood to write.
Yeah. I love that. People are waiting for the muse to strike. And you read enough writers and you talk to enough writers. And, you know, Ray Bradbury had a great one about this. He's doing a lecture in a writing class at some creative writing class in some college. And he finishes the lecture, and he's a very prolific writer. And one of the students says, you know, Mr. Bradbury, how do you get in the mood to write? I find it sometimes I'm not in the mood to write. And Bradbury just looks down at him from his great height from the podium with his bushy white eyebrows and big white hair and says, start writing, son. It'll take care of all those moods you're having. So I think that, you know, what I say is, a lot of writers say, yes, I have to wait for the muse to visit me, but I make sure I'm at my writing desk from 9 to 12 every day so the muse knows where to find me. And I think sometimes I'm not inspired. Then I just correct spelling or grammar, or I sharpen my pencils, or I prepare the bibliography. I do something on my book even when I'm not inspired. Sometimes when I'm inspired, I'm on a tear, and that's great, but actually most of it is perspiration. And also, the inspired part is the kind of the pouring out of the initial ideas. What the majority of writing for me is rewriting. So just get it out there. Get it out there in the rawest form. Don't wait for great inspiration. Just start filling blank pages and blank screens and then fix it in the mix, because sometimes in the mix the inspiration will come. So you don't have to wait to get in the mood to write. Just start writing. Even if it's crappy writing, start, you know, that's what Annie Lamott, a famous writer who wrote a book called Bird by Bird about writing, very good book I recommend to you, funny as hell, and she says, you got to commit to a shitty first draft. And I think that frees a lot of people up from that inspiration, I'm not in the mood to write, it's got to be perfect stuff. So just commit to a shitty first draft and fix it in the mix. Last one I put in terms of writing poisons that will kill your writing life is comparison. Sometimes I'll read a writer, like I actually read a book last night by Ann Patchett, who is a fantastic writer.
Amazing.
And I just want to cut off my fingers when I read her. I know all those words she used. I just don't put them in the same way she puts them. You know, I it's like poets. I read poets and I think, I know all those vocabulary words, but they put them together in this amazing way. And so you can't compare yourself to other people. It's the same thing on the workshop circuit. Sometimes I go to somebody and I think, wow, they were such a great presenter. I'm never going to be that good. But I'm just different. It's apples and oranges. You're just going to be as you are. And there are some people that are much better writers. But people have come up to me and said my books saved their lives, changed their lives, even if I'm not that great a writer. I just have to be good enough to communicate what's in my heart, what's in my soul. I don't have to be the best writer. I don't have to be the most lyrical writer in the world. I just need to get it out in the world so people can understand it, read it, and it touches them.
So if people were going to start, like, this afternoon, they're all excited now, they've heard your course, and they've heard this class, and they're going to sign up for your course, but they want to start this afternoon because they're all jazzed up, what should they do?
Well, for me, what I would do is I'd have the focused idea. If you don't have a focused idea, some of you already know what you want to write. You know exactly what you want to write. Some of you have 18 things you want to write, and that was my trouble. I had 5 books. When I started my first book, I had 5 books I wanted to write. So one of my agents really did a good service for me. She said, what do you have in mind for the next book, Bill? And I told her 3 different ideas, and I was excited about them. She said, which one do you have the most energy for? And I stopped and paid attention. God sunk into my body, and I thought, this one. I know. I mean, it was pretty clear for me which one I wanted to do. I wasn't sure it was commercially viable, so I wasn't sure she was going to go for it. She said, okay, great. Let's work with that one. And, yes, we're going to have to change it a bit to make it commercially viable, but let's use that energy you have. So what do you have as the most energy you have, and then focus that energy. Make your outline. If you haven't got those done, some of you are already there, so you don't need this part, but some of you need to focus. Just focus. If you've already focused, the first thing I would do is start writing. I'll tell you what happened for me. When I started writing, I knew I had a procrastinating kind of personality, so I deliberately did not go to writing courses. I did not read writing books. I sat my butt down and wrote. That is the Zen secret of writing. The only way to write is to write. Everything else is excuses, procrastination, commentary. Now, there's a little preparation it might be nice to do if you're not focused, you don't know what you're going to write about. But once you've got that, everything else is procrastination. Every moment you're not writing is just you telling yourself that someday you'll write. So start writing. That's the first thing I would do. And I would write, again, 5 minutes. Just commit to writing 5 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever you think is appropriate. Set a timer, and then at the end of that 15 minutes, stop, even if you feel like going on. Just because you'll convince yourself, okay, all I had to do was 15 minutes. Once I got my 15 minutes done today, I can stop. Now later, if you get into the habit of writing, you can do a lot more. Just start small, but start, and start writing. Then fix it the next day or write more the next day, but you commit to put 5 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever works in your life to getting it done. That's where I would start.
Mm-hmm. Good. Perfect.
Bill, unless there's something else you want to add, I'm going to take us off mute.
No, let's do.
And if there's anyone out there that wants to ask a question, has a comment, now's the time. Just introduce yourself and ask away.
Yeah, and if you muted yourself by star 6, you've got to unmute yourself too.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anyone's out there and wants us to say hello to make sure that I did this correctly, just say hi.
Hi.
Okay, thank
there
you.
There we go. Okay, we got at least one person.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, anybody have any questions? Yeah. Say your name.
I just wanted to ask a question, Bill. This is still Tammy. What I noticed on the WW Norton website that they're not taking any more unsolicited manuscripts or submissions. Are there other publishers that you would recommend for people?
Yeah, there are a bunch of publishers in psychotherapy land.
Mm-hmm.
Norton is the one I like the best, but there's Taylor and Francis, which publishes a lot of psychotherapy stuff. Sage Press, which publishes a lot of psychotherapy stuff. There is Basic Books, which is a little more for the general public, but they sometimes publish psychotherapy-related stuff. There's Guilford Press, the place I published my first book. They're all really good. I wouldn't believe that Norton thing.
Okay.
I know they say that, but that's because they get a flood of things. And, you know, it's like saying I'm not taking any new clients. Some of you would say that because you just are pretty booked up. But if somebody called and they had a compelling case, you might be willing to take them or you'd put them on a waiting list. So
okay.
I would still submit to WW Norton. I'm sorry, Deborah Malmute will probably be pissed at me for saying that if she hears me. But I would just persist. And that's going to be part of your success in your writing life. Do not take no for an answer. Don't be obnoxious about it, but don't take no for an answer. Just persist. If you've got a good enough quality thing, they want it. I don't care what they say on their website.
I love it.
All right. Where can you find one complete and highly secure suite of product?
Sorry, I didn't hear that very well. Can you repeat that?
Someone have a question? They want to say that again?
Talking about something else and we just overheard. otherwise, repeat it because I couldn't quite get it, whatever it was. So the other thing while we're waiting for, and somebody can just jump in if they have a question, but I made a list on the slides of ways that people have gotten themselves to write that I've noticed. One is the solution-oriented method. I was talking to a person one time who was having trouble writing a book, and I found out he'd written a dissertation. I said, well, how'd you write your dissertation? He said, he lived in New York City. He said, I had to stop my subscription to the New York Times because I'd sit there with my cup of coffee for 2 hours every morning reading the New York Times.
Oh.
I said, okay, so before you read the New York Times, you either stop your subscription or before you read the New York Times, you have to do at least an hour of writing on your book. And he was like, oh, okay, yeah, I can do that.
Oh.
He was stuck, and he called me for coaching and paid me money, and I'm like, dude, you already know how to do this, but I reminded him. So what have you ever done in terms of writing and gotten it done? How have you gotten it done? Or more generally, what have you ever done that's hard? Like, have you ever taken up exercise? Have you ever raised a child? How did you do it? How did you do something that was hard? Did you ever go back to graduate school when you didn't have very much money or you weren't sure you could do it? How did you do anything that was hard? Think about how you did that and apply it to writing your book. So that's the first method. I call it the solution-oriented method. The second method, we already talked about, the incremental method. Break it into smaller pieces if it seems overwhelming for you. Don't try and take the whole thing on. Just take bite-sized chunks. The third one, and I've had people come out to my intensive groups because of this, they said, the reason I'm here is that my mentor died a couple of years ago, and on his deathbed, he made me promise that I would write this idea that I've had for years for a book. It's been 2 years since my mentor died. I feel really bad. I made a promise. I need to do it. So promise someone in your life that you will write the book, someone that will take it seriously and you'll take it seriously, not just make an empty promise, but make a promise. Usually the promises we make to ourselves we break, but if you can make a promise to yourself, make a promise to yourself. By this time next year, I will have a proposal done and I'll have my book done, or by this time 6 months from now. So the next one is the marathon method. Some people really do need that time away. It's never worked for me because I have a busy life and I like all the parts of my life, my family life, my social life, my professional life. I didn't want to take time away from my life. I have never taken a long time off to write a book. I've always written it in the midst of my busy life. But if you find that that marathon method works, find some place where you can go, get away from the telephones and the email and all the distractions and the kids, and take some time. Take a weekend, take a week, take longer if you want. I have a writer friend that I'm having stay at my house for a month to take care of an animal. And she's just so happy to get away from her usual place and stay out in my place for a month and have no distractions and write. So the marathon method will work for some of you. For some people, the consequence method works. If you don't get this done by this time, this is what you have to do. You have to do 50 sit-ups for every day you don't write for 5 minutes. Or you have a positive consequence. Every 2 pages you write, you get to buy a new song on iTunes or whatever. You know, you just have positive or negative consequences linked to your writing life. The next thing that I have on this getting yourself to write is morning pages or free writing. Morning pages is an invention of Julia Cameron, who wrote a book called The Right to Write and The Artist's Way. And she has this method. Right when she wakes up, she's sort of in that funky state of a little still unconscious, sort of hypnopompic state. And she gets up and writes first thing in the morning, free writing. She just writes whatever comes to her, maybe her dreams, maybe ideas, maybe just writing about not being able to write that morning. She keeps her pen moving, and that's another method by Natalie Goldberg called free writing. She's a Zen writer. And she says, here's the method of getting your restricted, conscious, rational, critical mind out of the way. Keep your pen moving. You cannot stop your pen. You have to commit to writing for 15 minutes, and you can't stop your pen from writing. You can't lift the pen from the paper. You just have to keep writing. Even if it's, I don't know what to write. This is a stupid exercise. I hate doing this. And then nothing's coming to my mind. Just keep writing. And after a while, that conscious mind sort of goes away and gives up, and you get into more, your more creative thing. So morning pages and free writing are great, but be careful of just generating endless reams of unconnected and unfocused stuff. Use this in a focused way for your focused writing. Contribution method, that's what grabbed me, is I wanted to make a difference in the field of psychotherapy, and that's what pulled me to write. I had this passion to contribute to my field. And, you know, if you're passionate about couples and you want to relieve suffering in the world, you are ripping off the world if you don't get this book written. Don't let your personality flaws get in the way of the contribution you have to make. Get over it, you know. Stop procrastinating. Stop being afraid. Stop being worried that people will criticize you, or stop saying you can't do it or you're too lazy. Just get your butt down on the chair and start to write. The last thing that I put on the, you know, what works to get yourself to write is the cathartic transformation model. Use some crisis you have or some pain you have in your life and write yourself out of that pain. Some of my books have been written on, I wrote a book called Thriving Through Crisis, and it happened because I had a breakdown when I was suicidally depressed when I was younger. Then I had a second one when I went through a terrible divorce when I was older. And I thought, you know, each of these have been terrible experiences, but they've led to something really great in my life, some new development. And I think people aren't recognizing how great, you know, breakdowns and crises can be. Even though they're terrible to go through, they can lead to something good, but only if you treat them in a certain way and handle them a certain way. So I sat down and wrote myself out of the third crisis I was in, which I won't go into, through writing this book called Thriving Through Crisis. So use your writing as a self-expression, but also an expression into the world of something you think would be helpful for people to know.
Bill?
Yeah.
Hi, Bill and Tammy. This is Damian. This is Shannon Houston. I missed the first half, so maybe you've answered this. Question is, if I prepare the proposal and I take it to a publisher and they say, I like it, do they put a deadline? Or if they do, how negotiable is that? I guess I have a fear that they'll say, we want this book done in 90 days.
It's negotiable, definitely, and you usually make it up. I mean, if you say 5 years, they're going to say, oh, that's a little too far out for us. But usually it's a year, but you can say, I need a year and a half. or I need 2 years. And usually they'll say, that doesn't really fit with us. How about a year and a quarter? So they'll negotiate with you a bit, but you say it in the proposal how long you can do it. There's a section of the proposal that where you say how many pages it's going to be, whether you're going to need any permission or put any artwork in the book, and then when you think you can get it done, when you say you'll get it done. And usually you set that, and it's almost always a year.
Thank you.
Could you say something about articles, writing articles versus books, and how one is it a different process? Is it a different approach to magazines versus?
Yeah, there is. Now, first of all, it's bite-sized chunks, which is nicer. I've written 57 articles or book chapters, and I've written 30 books. If I had my druthers, I'd rather write a book. Number one, they're seen more. Number two, I get paid more. Articles are easier to do because they're smaller, but they're harder to do in some ways because you have to focus. The old joke that Mark Twain or somebody said one time, or Churchill or somebody said, "I'm sorry, that I'm writing such a long letter. I didn't have time to write a shorter one." So, you have to focus in an article or in a book chapter. Usually there's not much money in it. I'm actually writing an article now where I'm making $1,200 for a 2,400-word article, so that's pretty good, but that's rare. And most of you, because you're in psychotherapy land, are going to write for free for journals or even free as a book chapter. So it's a nice way to dip your toe into it, but I wouldn't spend too much time on doing it, or I'd write an article on the way to a book, and I would then revise it for the book. But I think if you're going to get your work out there, a book is a much more effective way to get it out there in the world than an article. But if you need to write articles to get started and develop your confidence and your writing skills, just like blogging, I think that's a fine thing to do.
We have about 1 minute left, Bill. Is there anything else you want to close with? You want to give people more information about stuff that you're doing? You want to tell people exactly what you're offering with the discount?
Sure. Yeah, I think, I taught intensive groups, 5-day groups here in Santa Fe, where I had people come out. I helped them focus their book projects and get them written. And then after a while, so I don't want to work so much. I'm getting into my dotage, and I'm relaxing more and earning more on the internet and through teleseminars, and so I put it all online. I just put a course online, and I put all the parts, the informational parts that we've done here, but in more depth, and giving you worksheets and giving you other things, proposal templates, things like that, that you can just fill in the blanks, and that is online at Book Publishing Path. You go to www.bookpublishingpath.com. That's all one word, bookpublishingpath.com/discount with a small d, discount, / imago with a capital I, .html. And that will be on the slides that Tammy and Kevin will have up on the site next to the recording for this. I have a general website on writing books called getyourbookwritten.com as well, if you just want to go and look at that, but you won't get that big discount. So that course is an online course. It has some downloadable parts, and it has some parts you watch online and listen to online. So you can go check that out if you want to, if you're really ready to go. Last call, someone signed up for it and is getting going on their book already. So, if that's of interest to you, you can do that. I occasionally do teleseminars on this, and longer-term ones to things like that. We have to go, I guess.
Yeah. Do you also do individual coaching for people? I'm sure there's.
I don't do any individual coaching anymore. I do group coaching on occasion, but I'm trying to work less and less as the years go on because I'm making enough money from the internet and from my books, and I've even stopped my practice in the last few years. I'm not in psychotherapy practice anymore, so I rarely do. I cost so much for individual coaching, you wouldn't want to pay me that much.
Okay.
You could convince me to do it. So probably group coaching. If you're interested, just write me at bill@billohanlon.com, and I'll put you on the waiting list for a coaching group.
Perfect.
What people pay for books? I have no idea what people make on a book.
Well, now, again, you can go back to the first call and listen to that. But in psychotherapy books, they'll pay you either nothing to about $8,000 at the top. For a general public book, it starts at about $5,000 or $10,000 up to $500,000, but you probably won't get $500,000. But you might get $30,000 or $40,000 if you get a good agent, you write a good proposal, it's a great book idea. You could get $30,000 or $40,000 in advance.
Okay, folks, thanks, Bill, so much for today. And Bill will be on again a third time in a few weeks. So look on the schedule, the Imago Think Tank schedule, to find out when he's coming in. I think it's in April.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about how to get on the speaking circuit.
Yeah, perfect. So thanks so much, Bill. I really appreciate it. And
thanks, Tammy. Thanks, Kevin.
Make sure you check out his website so that you can get on his circuit and find out more about what he's doing. Thanks, Bill.
Sure. Thanks, Tammy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.